Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 29th of August, and I'm recording at 9:50 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, let's have a look at the week and even the month. Well, the month has been pretty strong for stock markets, despite a lot going on in terms of global concerns. More on that in a moment. And this week, focus on Wall Street, because as the biggest capitalization market, it's certainly the most influential. And Wall Street's been very steady. The S&P 500 closed back above 2000 today at 2003.37. But it's really been ranging this week, as have the other U.S. indices that we see. But nevertheless, there's a bulletproof quality about Wall Street, despite some fairly high valuations. For instance, the S&P that I just mentioned, that's on 18 times earnings, has a yield of 1.9%. The NASDAQ 100 index has a considerably higher multiple. I just can't remember it right now, so I'm going to just produce that chart and remind myself. And that is, the yield's only 1.25, I know, and it's 23.67 on the PE. And the NASDAQ Composite Index, I believe, has, according to Bloomberg, price-earnings ratio of about 67, and again, a yield of 1.220. So Wall Street is not exactly cheap here overall, but as I said, I think a moment ago, it remains virtually bulletproof. Well, how can that be? And I think the main reason here is that some money, has been coming out of the bond market. Also, what we do know is that the biggest factor some investors have switched some money out of the bond market and onto Wall Street, but they've also been aggressively buying the bond market as well, but not as aggressively as the Fed, and that's the big factor. The Fed is still pumping a huge amount of money into the U.S. system, just underlining the fact that in terms of really major fundamental influences, the actions of the Fed are all important. Well, how long can this go for? And there's certainly plenty of warnings that are being issued. And as a matter of fact, those warnings have been issued over the last year and a half or more by some fairly high profile people. Well, as long as the monetary policy remains positive, and it will certainly for the rest of this year, I think that can be that certainly is a favorable tailwind for Wall Street. Also, there are a lot of late time buyers in here. For instance, the hedge fund industry, it's had a tough year. Had a tough year last year, particularly in the fourth quarter, because of the two-way bets, and so there's a certain amount of catch-up play, and a number of other investors who really were either didn't join the bull market or came out several years ago or were certainly underinvested have been upping their positions as well. Now, I don't become more bullish of Wall Street the higher it goes, although I'll be temporarily more optimistic when I see a trend reaffirmed. And we have gone through some ranging periods of uncertainty, tests of the rising 200-day moving averages. But as you know, for Wall Street, again, resolved to the upside. Even the Russell 2000 index, which will almost certainly give us the best lead to the downside when that eventually occurs, but it's regained two-thirds to three-quarters of its range, I should say. It's been trading in a range all year, unlike the other indices which have moved higher, but it is the Russell 2000, there's a lot of smaller companies in that index. It's not all that far off its actual highs, whereas a couple of months ago it was testing range lows. Okay. Another factor that I think is interesting and has certainly impressed me is the fact that Wall Street has managed to see a number of big overextensions to the upside, which make me nervous when they occur. But we've seen those shares correct those overextensions, whether we're talking about the mighty Apple, which is right up on its all-time highs, or whether we're talking about Amazon. There's so many examples of these big multinational companies which have been able to correct the overexcesses without dragging down the whole market. And that's been quite impressive here overall. I take a little bit of comfort from the fact that mining shares have not seen anything like the performance that I would expect them to see before the a bull market usually ends. And that applies to some of the other highly cyclical shares as well. So that's the picture, pretty much. And if we look at the overall gains here of Wall Street's biggest indices, if I take right now the Dow, well, it's only up 3.15% on the year. The S&P, that's up 8.39%, and the Nasdaq, that's the Nasdaq Composite, is up 9.67%. So tech side is the dominant dominant performer, but those are good gains, and actually they're better than I really expected at the beginning of the year. There's nothing unusual in that, because when you get a strong bull market, it does surprise pretty well everyone, except perhaps for the holy fools, in terms of what it actually achieves. And it's the bottom line on this is that it is still intact despite all the warnings. There are concerns ahead. I mentioned yesterday the situation of new issues coming up, particularly the Alibaba float. There was an article in the Telegraph yesterday saying that Alibaba, some people are saying it's worth $200 billion. Well, that's a lot of money. And certainly when that is floated, whether it's late in September or perhaps in October, I don't think the date has been announced yet, that will siphon a lot of money away from some other stocks. But so far, without Alibaba, the new issues, while they are climbing, are not as high as they were during that fourth quarter period last year overall. And then while I talk about that Wall Street performance, which is impressive, it's by no means exceptional around the world. For instance, Canada. And now all these quotes, or percentages rather, that I'm going to give you are in U.S. dollars. So for comparative purposes, Canada's currently up 12%. Mexico up 6.5%. Brazil up over 25% here. That's in U.S. dollars. So that's doing very, very well here. And among the Asian indices, well, Japan's a laggard. It's actually down, but a very small amount on the year so far. But the China market, it's not exceptional by any means, but on the plus side. And I mentioned yesterday, so I don't want to repeat all of these, but it's worth having a look in this big picture audio at a few other indices. But just touch lightly, India, 28.85% higher. That's and then we see Thailand up 23%, Indonesia up 25%. New Zealand up 12.25%. There are lots of big gains in that Asia Pacific region I missed out on the Australian market, up over 10% on the S&P ASX 200. And when we go and look at Europe, this is the problem area here right now. Now, the European shares are cheap, as we've known, and they were doing quite well for a while this year because of that cheapness and the fact that Mario Draghi was had obviously put everybody's worst fears about Europe into the background. But then we have Europe, which is sliding back into recession, or right on the verge of recession, and concerns over deflationary pressures which are re-emerging. So Europe's not doing all that well. And the German DAX index down 5.25% on the year, and a number of other European stock markets are either showing a very modest gain so far this year, or are underwater a little bit. And another key factor for that is the Russian situation, or the Putin situation, I should say, which is also weighing on Europe, and that's going to remain the case, I think, for a while, a while longer. And but you know, if we take that whole European region and include some of the other stock markets, for instance, take the Middle East, some of the leading Middle East indices, Qatar up 30%. The United Arab Emirates, it depends which of the indices there that you take, but I'm looking at three of them on my screen right now, and they're up between, well, the best one's up 46%, and the worst one's up 18%. And we can also see elsewhere, Kuwait up 7.5%, Bahrain up 18%, the Saudi Arabian market up 29.37%. Now, if you're feeling a little bit nervous about that, I certainly understand, and I agree with you. But they are still intact, and the monetary policies are still really quite positive. So that's the background. Well, what might change all that? Well, inevitably it will change, but the fact that some of the world's crises that we're seeing, from the Middle East to Russia, and I think the Russian one is the more serious of those. In terms of human lives, a lot more are being lost in the Middle East, quite obviously. But as I've said before, and I'm talking now with an analytical head, not with a heart, but as long as the price of crude oil is not spiking higher on concerns over the Middle East, this is a local problem in a big region. It's a tragedy in terms of lives lost in the Middle East, but in terms of global markets, it's not a big influence here right now, and that I believe will remain the case, despite the fact that we're seeing stepped-up military efforts, or maybe those stepped-up military efforts are reassuring investors. A little bit of both, I suspect. And the oil prices are quiet here. The Brent, which is the important one, it's rallied a little bit off that oversold position, but it's only 103 and change, $103 and change. That's really not a problem at this stage. Best just to try to wrap on those stock markets, I just repeat the point that I don't get more bullish with every new high. That would be silly. I am concerned about Alibaba and some of the other flirtations that are coming up. It'll be interesting to see how market deals with the final completion of the quantitative easing, but I think it might not worry all that much until we see a sharp push higher in those long-dated government bond yields. And also another factor would be when the Fed starts to actually raise short-term interest rates, because it's the really veteran subscribers who've been with me 40, 50 years will, as some of you have, will know that it's central banks that kill off most bull markets. Well, right now, the bottom line here is that the central banks are still feeding most bull markets. So what do I like going forward? Well, again, I'll say as long as Wall Street's still to the left of its 200-day moving averages, then this is still intact. A warning sign would be a big acceleration to the upside by the U.S. market. We haven't seen that here recently, although we are still a little bit overbought here in the short term. Low valuation markets, China. That certainly is interesting, and you can play that through Hong Kong. And what are we talking about? A PE ratio that I think is not more than 12, and decent yield. I think it's, as I recall now, I think it's over 3%. You know, so Vietnam is attractive in terms of valuations and in form. I think Japan, which is cheap on book value, I think that's going to well, I think it's in the process of completing this big multi-month consolidation of last year's huge gains, and that will actually remain in form. I think Australia will remain very steady, probably New Zealand here as well. So there are still, again, as I say, a lot of markets that actually remain in form. Now, among the warning signals that we would look for, which I mentioned, obviously when the Fed starts raising interest rates, that will be a headwind. And when removing the punch bowl is the adage that people have used for decades in that respect. And in terms of the government bond yields, which are remarkably low, and I must say I'm surprised by the how low they actually are. And if we look at that, and well, my explanation with hindsight, and that would be that first you've got the massive quantitative easing project, which is hoovering up still a huge number of bonds. That will continue to until at least the end of October. Then you have, I think, international investors who are moving into U.S. Treasuries, and although that yield is only at 2.34, that is very, very attractive relative to the less than 1% yields in Japan and Germany. And so I think we're getting global money, and also world concerns are from Russia to the Middle East are causing a number of international investors to invest not only in the U.S. stock market but also in the U.S. government bond market. And then those big bond funds, they are still saying, well, we know more than you do, and they do so far here, because they're still right. Those markets are still performing. My concern about those, at least in terms of the long-term positions, which people are concentrating a lot of funds, is that I think a whole, well, I think I feel this is a genuine bubble here, but how can it be a bubble if the Fed is still buying these issues, I ask, and the fact that the Fed is still buying them is reassuring investors. They're saying, well, I'm not fighting the Fed, I'm backing the Fed. But if I were in that market, I would feel a little bit like the plump, well-fed rabbit in the cage on the farm who is envied for his size and robust good health or considerable weight by the wild rabbits that are on the outside and looking in. But the story seldom ends that well for that plump, well-fed rabbit kept on the farm. And that's what I think is going to happen for these bond investors. They're going to stay in there for too long, and then they're going to get locked in for really quite some time. So I'd be wary of that. I'd rather have the higher yielding equities and a diverse portfolio of those equities. I'd be wary of changing things that are running too strongly ahead on the upside. Certainly anything that gets quite overextended relative to the MA, that's an obvious point at any stage in markets. You know that it's going to then revert to the mean, or at least have a period of underperformance overall. If we look around for shares that are offering attractive yields and cheap valuations, they aren't the most exciting of things, or at least not in this environment overall. You look at the shares like BHP Billiton, Rio Tinto, Tinto Zinc, some of the utilities, which have good yields and multiples, well, you know, in the 10, 12 range. But they haven't caught the imagination here so far. So the and on you know that adage on the short to medium term, the stock market is a voting machine. Investors are not voting for those value shares, but I think certainly some of them deserve a position in one's portfolio. Okay. Well, what's going to happen here on these bond markets, unless they are discounting global deflation, then it's going to end badly. I think. Well, we see who's had the deflation? Japan for over 20 years, for the most part. But Shinzo Abe and his central bank are doing everything they can to try to halt that deflation, and I don't think that they're going to give up on that. If we look at So I think that they will end that deflation, although it's a battle, and it may not happen over the short term, but probably will over the lengthy medium term. Europe is a concern as far as deflation is concerned, and the policies are going to have to become, I think, more accommodative within Europe to head off a deflationary crunch, and therefore those yields may well stay lower for quite a lengthy time. But looking at those bond markets, they make me nervous. But I was saying that a year or two ago. And also saying that I much preferred stock markets, and the bond markets have done just fine, and the stock markets have done even better for the most part. What else can we talk about here? Currencies. I mentioned that the U.S. dollar was attracting capital. That's hardly surprising. It's growing or it's recovering, I should say, for the most part, faster than other large Western economies. And the U.S. dollar was in a very, very competitive position overall. And it looks to me like it's going to move higher, not in a straight line, obviously, but I would expect it to range higher over the lengthy medium term. And I think that the Fed will be quite satisfied with that until the dollar is clearly more expensive than other currencies, but it's certainly not at this time. The euro, I think the ECB wants a weaker euro, and it's helping to bring that about. And the euro now trading at 1.3132 against the US dollar. Sterling, I think, will remain reasonably firm, but it's going to stay closer to its current levels of 165, 166, rather than get back up above that 170 level overall. The Chinese currency, which was the strongest at the beginning of the year, and then they intervened and weakened it for two or three months. But it's recovered almost half of the weakness that we had actually seen off its highs, I should say. So I think that's probably going to stay in reasonably close proximity to the U.S. dollar, and I think extreme currency moves or sharp currency moves are likely to be an exception rather than the general story. That's been the case for the most part over the last few years, and I think that will probably remain the case overall. The Japanese probably want to weaken the yen a little bit further to ensure their growth. So I'd anticipate that a somewhat weaker Japanese yen. What about precious metals as currencies? Well, I think gold's fair value here, but I've mentioned that, you know, you take that big move to the upside, really from, especially from 2003 up into 2001, you could take back to 2011. That was an awfully big move, and I had said previously in some of these audios that the retracement that we've seen was not all that lengthy in proportion. So we basically have a ranging situation here overall, and with investors more concerned about yield than anything else, the precious metals have yet to spark a big investor interest. I do think that's changing, though. It's the change is being led by palladium. Owen has a piece on that today, which is interesting and informative. I think that platinum, which fell back from $1,500 to $1,400, but is now steadying at that level, I think platinum will also benefit a little more over the medium term. And at some point, I think investors will divert more capital towards the precious metal sector. If you want to anticipate that, gold and silver, as I said already, are reasonably cheap, I feel, but I wouldn't have more than a 5% stake in my portfolio in those two precious metals. And I personally, while I hold silver futures, it's been a kind of a Sisyphusian experience of rolling the rock up the hill and not taking the profit often enough when it has gone up the hill. But my precious metal position is considerably less than 5%, 5% at this stage. And industrial metals again gradually recovering here, and that's to be expected as the global economy gradually improves. And it really is gradual improvement, isn't it? And that's not because policies are failing. It's because of the credit crisis recession, as I've said for so many years. And it does take at well, all the history on this subject says that at very minimum it takes 5 years before an economy recovers, and we're in the fifth year here since Wall Street saw the trough of its credit crisis recession, and it can easily be several years longer than that overall. But therefore, I think the trade-off on that, well, it's not so good in terms of in terms of salaries. However, it does create a bit of a sweet spot in terms of stock markets. And corporate profits have been doing better than their economies, genuinely, but also because they've plowed a fair amount of money into share buyback programs, which flatters their earnings somewhat. But nevertheless, they're paying dividends and raising dividends, and those markets are still in form. Okay, I don't really, I've gone on too long as it is. I'll draw this to a close. Have a wonderful weekend, and subscribers living in the States, enjoy that Labor Day weekend and the Monday holiday as well. All the best.